The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on episode 277 of Wheel Bearings, Nicole is back from her vacation. We've got the Toyota Tundra Hybrid, the Kia EV6 GT. Who is the Edsel to Tesla? Redwood Materials is building a battery recycling plant. Should Apple buy Lucid? The Mazda CX-9 is going to go plug-in. CX-90 is going to go plug-in hybrid. And all that and more coming up next. This is Wheel Bearings, episode 277. I am Sam Abual Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from, let's see what I've done in a while, Sports Car Market Magazine, where I get
Who the hell are you?
I know.
Sports Car Market Magazine.
Yeah, I get to do, I have a monthly column. I do these really cool interviews with really interesting people. I actually really like it. It's one of the fun gigs. It's a fun gig.
Well, you should see if you can get any of those people to come on the show as a guest sometime.
I could probably do that. I could probably
Sports
do that.
Car Market Magazine.
And what about you?
Oh, I'm Roberto Baldwin. I'm from This Week, let's say Engadget, since I've been doing a lot of videos for Engadget. In fact, I'll be doing one tomorrow. So many videos.
While we got you, Robbie, what have you been driving?
So I talked about the McLaren last week, didn't I?
Yes.
I
don't remember anymore. So I went back to the exact same damn desert, Las Vegas, and I drove the Kia EV6 GT. The GT, not the GT line, which is, I don't know.
The real GT.
The real GT, not the GT line, which is not the GT.
So, Robbie, it's like we both drove this. I was in a different way. We both drove this week.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
So we can both talk about it.
We
so yeah, so I had driven this vehicle about an hour, about a month before. So for about an hour, a month before, I drove the EV6 GT. I was very impressed with it then. And then I drove it this past week, and I am very impressed with it now. It is, when I drove it the first time, my first thought was, oh, it's like a baby Taycan. It's fast. There's a lot of room.
Except, wait, how many of these could you buy for one?
You could buy two. You could double. So you could get two EV6 GTs for the price of a Taycan.
One Taycan. Yeah.
Of a, well,
or if you got the, what about with the Taycan Turbo S?
The inexpensive one, yeah. The 80 something thousand dollar one. You could get one. One and a half of these?
No, one and a half of these.
No, one and a third. It's see, I.
You could maybe get one of these and get a Kona EV too.
Yeah, you could probably do that. There you go. So you can get one of these, and then you have a little, like a little, another EV.
Little Kona is backup.
Yeah, little Kona is backup. Yeah, so the EV6 GT, it's quick, 0-60 in 3.4 seconds, which is
fast.
Sort of ridiculous at this point. It's 576 horsepower, 546 pound-feet of torque. It still has the same 77.4 kilowatt-hour battery, but it's built on an 800-volt architecture, which means it charges at up to 240 kilowatts at a DC fast charger, which is faster than offerings from Mercedes, Ford, BMW,
Nissan.
The Hyundai, Nissan. It's quick, and that's sort of the big news when it comes to Hyundai is, well, besides the fact that the cars look cool, is that they charge really quickly, and I think that's the real issue is charging anxiety, because you're like, oh, I'm going to go across country. I don't want to sit for 45 minutes every time I stop, which I sure I can understand that. But this is quicker.
Well, and that's the thing. I was talking about this when I was doing the drive, that it's not just how many miles can you go, but like when you get to the end of that miles, when you're on a road trip, because you're almost never going to run out of all those miles just in your day to day. How long do I have to sit and wait? If I have to sit and wait for 2 hours, that feels painful. You know, that feels like, oh God, I'm just never getting to my destination because I'm going to be charging. This goes, I think the number was up to 80%. I think it's 18 minutes at the fastest charging. So 18 minutes, seriously, go inside, peruse the shelves, and buy what might kill you from the Slim Jim / packaged pastry food section of the convenience store. Take a bathroom break, come back out, you got to wait 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm always amazed at how quickly time passes when you're driving an EV and you go to park and you go to get, you know, oh, I'm going to charge it. It's going to take 30 minutes or whatever. That time moves really, really quickly. And when it's 18 minutes, it's the bathroom break, buying some sort of processed meat stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the meat stick. Don't buy those things that just roll on the little grill endlessly, because those will actually kill you. You'll be stopping in about 20 minutes.
Been thoroughly processed and vacuum wrapped, right?
Right, because otherwise you're going to be stopping in 20 minutes later, and you're going to be stopping for a lot longer, and it will not be pleasant.
And then you may have to be stopping like every 10 minutes
every
after
10
that,
minutes for the next 2 hours.
And then that place, it doesn't matter how quickly your car is charging. You're not going anywhere.
On the other hand, you know, if it can go 0-60 in 3.5 seconds, you know, you can cover a lot of ground in that 10 minutes.
That's true. In the brief time that you're allowed, you can drive before you need your next bathroom break.
I'm going. Well, it's a top speed of 161 miles an hour in a Kia. I like to just keep pointing out because everyone's ignored the Stinger. And that's just, it's a shame
because the Stinger is a fantastic car.
Yeah. It's tragically ignored by the public. Everyone loves it. I finally had one like a few months ago. And I loved it. And I'm like, this is a really great car that no one. It's a coupe. It's a car. It's not an SUV.
It's a sedan. It's a hatchback sedan.
Yeah.
It's a fastback, I guess. I don't even know anymore. Yeah.
And everybody ignores it, and it's a great car. And the thing I kept thinking, because part of this drive that we did, Robbie, we took it on this beautiful route through the Valley of Fire, and then we went to the Las Vegas Motor Speedway in our Kia. And we drove it around a track, and then we took it
strip
to the drag strip. Robbie, we took a Kia to the drag strip.
And then I got to drift it, so I got to do that. It was just like all these things. It has a drift mode. There's this fun, like, Capcom special code to get into drift mode.
X, red, yellow, green, blue, X.
You got to, like, turn the car on.
Left, right, left, right.
You got to hold down the parking brake button. And then you have to put your foot, and after that, you hold that down for a little bit, and then you hold down the traction control until that's completely off. Then you put your foot on the gas, you hold the gas all the way down. Then you pull both paddles, and you hold those, so you have the foot on the gas all the way down, you're holding the paddles all the way down, then it goes into drift mode. And
so
then,
super easy. Super easy.
And then, well, considering how easy that thing goes into drift, and how many times I was just getting it, like, just a 180, I kept pulling 180s instead of drifting, that's probably the one of the things. I'm like, you know what, because the super elaborate, weird thing you people have to do to go into launch mode, it was always just like, people are just going, this is dumb. Drift mode, though, on the other hand, I'm totally fine with, to be honest, because people are going to, because they're idiots, they're going to try this on the regular road, and if you
don't do that. You shouldn't do that.
No, you should definitely not. They told us, don't do that. Don't use drift mode on the regular road, because it will, because it throws all the power that the vehicle is producing while you're in it is 100% in the back on the rear wheels. And as soon as you hit it, you turn it, you're sideways. And
there should be, I mean, even if you know how to do this, you've done this 100 times, you should not be doing this on public road.
Because you need
You need a track.
You should never be doing any of this sort of stuff on public roads. You know,
find
whether
a track
drift day
mode
somewhere. Yeah. Or any of the other fancy stuff. This is the stuff you do in a very large empty parking lot or a track, or an autocross course, things like that. Yeah. A Although you don't really want to do it in an autocross because then you get penalty points for killing the cones.
But you're going to hit all the cones if you put the
every cone. All the cones. Like, yum, yum, yum. Eat them all up.
It took me a while to get it, literally, because it's just so used to like having to like talk the car into drifting, and you don't.
You're like, the car on, is, can we drift? Wee! Whoops!
Yeah, typically you're talking the car into drifting. With this, you're not. It's like, hey, you're like, oh gosh, whoa, hold on, let me try again. Well, no, let me figure, no. But yeah, no, I like the EV6 as a regular car. I especially like the EV6 GT as a sports car. Again, yeah. A Kia. It's fast. It handles much better than its regular counterpart.
It does.
It's still you still feel that EV heft. It's not it's not a Porsche. It's not it's not planted on the road as well as something like as a Taycan. But there's a reason why.
Or a Stinger, probably.
Or a Stinger, yeah. But having said that, it's still just a fun car to have. You do get kicked in the face when it comes to range, though.
You do. With this. There's a big difference.
There is. It's 206 miles is the range on this. That's the EPA. If you get this the regular rear-wheel drive long-range EV6, you can do 310 miles. So it's like 100 miles difference.
But if you're the all-wheel drive ones aren't. I mean, it's still a hit, but not quite because it's depending on the trim, 282 and 252.
Yeah.
For all-wheel drive. So at least like if you're comparing all-wheel drives across the board, you could get a Kia EV6 with all-wheel drive for 282. But it wouldn't be fun. I mean, it wouldn't be as fun. It would not be as fun, and you aren't going to be able to do the drift. And it doesn't have the little glowy. It doesn't actually glow. It feels like it should. That neon green mode button
day
on
glow.
The steering wheel. It's like this day glow green. Like, hello, 1980. You're back. It's a really bright green. So
that's even worse than the Genesis GV60 Performance, which has the same powertrain in it. Did they give any explanation for why it's worse than the GV60?
No.
I mean, higher performance tires?
I don't think anybody specifically asked that question, and they didn't get into that.
I'll have to send a little note to James and ask.
I don't know
about
if it
that.
Was you got a different answer at your because we were different waves. I don't know if you had got anything better.
Yeah, we didn't.
Maybe they have higher performance tires on the Kia.
I think they do
on the Genesis.
They were not low rolling resistance tires because you try to drift in low resistance. I mean, if you have low rolling resistance, those things will break free way easier. But I don't think we would. I think it would just spun the wheels.
We've just been like off. Ice, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, just everywhere. That would not have worked.
But even with that, it costs. Let me get the price. I have.
I
it
got
on
it. $61,400.
$61,400.
Is so that it's with or without the delivery charge?
That's without the delivery charge.
I think it's
charge.
Without. Okay.
Yeah. So you're paying a lot of money. You're losing range, but you're also getting a really fun crossover that you can still cram all your stuff in. There's still like lots of room inside the vehicle for in the front and the back seats. That's one of the things with that EGMP platform is that the rear seats have surprisingly a large amount of room for tall people and not so tall people. I really like the Kia EV6 GT. If I were not a writer, if I were a person who had a real job and made more money.
So which one, if you're going to get an EV6, which one would you get, Robbie? The money thing.
Oh, I would get the EV6 GT.
Yeah.
I would definitely get the EV6 GT just because it's. I know it's a lot of power that you probably won't use all the time, but it's the same, but that's the same like thing with
that's any car.
My BRZ, it's not that performance. I'm not using it all the time, but when I am, like when I do, I won't go into the back. There's a lot of back roads around my house. I'm gonna go drive around in my car. Then yeah, but the EV6 GT has more. I could like put band stuff in the back. you know what I mean? And like you try sticking a bass guitar in the trunk of a BRZ, it just doesn't work.
Doesn't work out well. Doesn't fit.
No.
A little squished.
Yeah, I have to put it. I can shove it in the back seat, which is
Is it like have to have it exactly the right angle? Which side faces up? Where the everything has to be perfectly.
Yeah, like I have to open it up and slide it in. It just fits with the case, the bass guitar. Or I just put the front seat back a little bit and it just sits as the passenger. So I just drive around with the passenger bass guitar. Regular guitar, I think, will fit in the... No, I don't think that'll fit in the back either, actually. Now that I think about it, yeah, neither of my guitars will fit in the trunk of my BRZ.
Poor BRZ. Backpacks
and bongos, though.
So backpacks, Robbie, and bongos.
You were mentioning the rear seat room, and you're like, what, 6'3", 6'4"?
6'3".
So I was watching a video yesterday that Roman Micah put up on TFL EV, I think, and he published a walk-around video. It wasn't a drive impressions review, just the walk-around. And he sat in the back seat of the EV6 GT, and he's not as tall as you. I think he's like 6 foot or 6'1". And he was complaining about headroom. And this, of course, you know, gets to the classic problem of, you know, even people who are the same height will not have this, you know, the same kind of experience.
All legs.
Yeah, because it depends on your proportions.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're all legs, you're going to have more headroom in that same seat versus, you know, but maybe a little bit less knee room, whereas Roman had lots of knee room, so he must be more torso, like me, than you are.
Yeah, and so, I'm all legs and arms.
Yeah, his head was hitting the headliner
like a squid.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking of those. You know those things that the little men that they have outside of like a gas station, a little blow-up.
Yeah,
with
they get you to buy stuff. The air guys.
I'm the air guy, just flopping around. Look how
you look just like him.
My arms don't even fit into the camera. That's how long they are. I have a 36-inch M seam.
Oof.
Yeah. So
that's some long legs.
Yeah, so I have really long. I will say that when I ever had to put a helmet on, though, I still, even in the EV6 GT, like my head was hitting the roof.
Well, who is there? There's
well, some, and that's not uncommon.
Yeah, and tall guys, like in some small cars, you guys, people your height, Robbie, can't you put the helmet on? It's like it's all over. You're
yeah,
driving,
it's like I'm a little bit kinked. It's never like, and then they're like, oh, now do some performance driving, and I'm like,
you're like, no, I can't. I
I'm
can't.
Like, I would be so
straight.
Much better at track days if. I wasn't
if you could sit up straight.
Yeah. Well, I was in an extreme pain.
You know, last May when I drove the Mazda Miata RF at Road America, you know, had a helmet on, and it was raining, so we had to have the roof closed.
Oh God!
You know, so it's like I'm sitting there, you know, squished. I had to put the seat, you know, push the seat forward and recline it back as much as I could fit. You know, and I'm only 5'11". You know, and my head's still kinked like this. You know, trying to squeeze in there. That was not a fun couple of minutes.
Yeah, no, it's a thing. I think I asked you once, Sam. I'm like, hey, if you buy your own helmet, will I have a little bit extra room? And you're like, no, they're all about the same. I'm like,
they're all the same.
Because motorcycle helmets, like you can buy motorcycle helmets are like, there's like varying degrees of.
But then you're going to have to haul a helmet with you wherever you go. That's like
the other thing.
I don't put it on a plane.
I don't have time for track days. I don't think I've never taken my BRZ to the track. I've been to the track a bunch of times, but it's always with, you know, on events. Mm-hmm. And then I get home and I'm just like, I just want to stay home. I just want to stay home with my cats and my dogs and my wife.
Well, the other problem with taking your own helmet, you know, to a media program with track day. I don't know if they did this for the Kia event, but a couple of years ago when Ford did the GT500 launch program at Las Vegas, you know, I took my helmet with me. But then we had to use a hands device.
And then you're stuck.
The ones that they had, you know, my helmet's got the studs on there for one type of hands device, but there's different ones on the market that have different connectors on them, and mine wouldn't work with that, so I had to use their helmet anyway. So
the we didn't have the hands.
But the hand, for people who don't know, it's like a shoulder mount.
It's short for head and neck support.
It keeps your head. It essentially keeps you from doing this and snapping your neck off.
This really stiff thing. It's like I always think it's this hard plastic that fits like front and back, and you cannot look the least little bit left or right. You can't really look up or down, which is super hard to do because I know you're getting on a track and they'll tell you, okay, you're clear to go, but you still want to look over your right shoulder out of habit. It's like forces you back. I find them
you have to use the mirrors and use your peripheral vision.
Yeah, they're look, so tight. I hate wearing them. I always feel like I can't breathe.
Most driving is look where you want to go.
But they have saved a lot of lives over the last 20 years.
Absolutely.
Since they were invented.
But they're not comfy.
Yeah.
Yeah, look where you want to go is like, okay, cool. Oh, gosh.
I can't look where my eyes don't look that far to the side.
Anyway, it's EV6 GT. It's a great little car. I really enjoyed it. That 240. You know what? I wish the Ioniq 5. I like the look of the Ioniq 5 still better. I'm sure we're probably going to get an N of one of those. I think that's what they said they would. And I'm happy.
Yeah, they have said there's an Ioniq 5 N coming.
So then that'll come out, and then I'll just flip back to the Ioniq 5.
So right now you're EV6 because there's a GT,
Of the EV6s, I would get the GT, but I would still get the Ioniq 5 because I like it the way it looks.
All the little squares, the little pixel kind of design all over it is cool. I like that about the Ioniq. Yeah.
Although, personally, I would still take the Kia over the I like the Ioniq a lot.
Why would you do Kia? What makes
I like the shape of it better.
Okay.
Yeah. See, that's that. I have some friends who walked outside and Ioniq 5 drove by, and I'm like, oh, isn't that cool? And they're like, no. And I'm like, what? They're like, they know which one's cool? The EV6. And I'm like, oh, well, it's the same car. They're like, we know, but we like it better. And I'm like, oh, so we're just, it's the same argument. Just for regular people.
This is why you have three distinctly different variants of the same car. The Hyundai Ioniq, which is, got one kind of design language to it. You have the EV6, which is essentially the same car, but with a different look to it. And some people like one or the other. And then you also have the Genesis GV60, which is distinct again, and more luxurious, more premium feeling than either of the other two. And
if it's yellow, it looks like Pikachu.
Yeah.
Bonus.
Pika Pika.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. Well, I can't wait to get one of these and try it out with my brand new Electrify America chargers that they just installed last week. That my local charging station has six chargers, and they've been over the last year they've gotten notoriously more unreliable, and so they ripped out five of the six. What they're doing is they're at each of the stations where they're doing these rip and replace. They're leaving the one charger that still has a CHAdeMO connector on it for Nissan Leaf drivers. And then they're replacing all of the others with brand new chargers. It's a new design. It looks different. It's got a bigger screen. I drove by it the other day. It didn't have an EV to plug in. But it looks like it should. The screen is much brighter. It looks like it should be much more usable in daylight. Can't wait to try those out. And of the previously we had two 350s. And then four 150s, including the CHAdeMO one. Now the five new ones are all 350 kilowatt hyperfast chargers. So now that I've seen the label and it says hyperfast 350 kilowatt, I know that hyper is better than ultra because the 150s are the ultras.
Hyper
is better than ultra. Remember that, kids.
And since now that they're all 350s at my local station, I don't have to worry about somebody taking up the one working 350 with a Chevy Bolt.
With their Bolt. I'm going to go back. For the Kia information, you had to go into the specs page, the spec sheet, in order to get to make sure it was 240, the charge rate. It's not on the site. It's not in the press release stuff. It's just like, you can go from 10% to 80% in however many minutes. They don't give you the number. You have to go into the spec sheet to find it. And I'm just like, just tell everybody what the number is.
Right. And this is a problem, for manufacturers. And, I don't necessarily blame consumers for using a faster charger than they need. Because
they don't know.
A lot of times they don't know.
Yeah. I think some people know. I think people who know probably try not to do that. But I think a lot of people, they just don't know that kind of detail. Like you said, Robbie, it's so hard to find it. So it's not something that's like, hey, stuck right. Like the octane for fuel is easy to find
in
your car.
You open up the
door, there's a label right there that says.
Yeah, if you could flip it open and immediately see it, right there, this is what my car is capable of charging at. Then you would know, if it was right there.
And at least with octane and gasoline, It doesn't matter if you put in 85 octane or 95 octane. The tank still fills in the same amount of time. So it doesn't matter which pump you use from that perspective.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas with the battery, it's a very different thing.
Big difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right. Well, always the complaint in about.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. I drove something that did not have a plug on it. Was not particularly fuel efficient.
I'm looking at you. I just scrolled up on our spreadsheet. Go ahead with that.
So I had the new Toyota Tundra iForce Max Capstone 4x4. So the Capstone is the new trim level that Toyota is introducing across their trucks and SUVs. It's their top of the line, you know, equivalent of a Limited or Platinum or
Platinum.
You know, some of the other trim levels at various. Everybody's got different branding for their highest
top,
end.
They're fancy.
Trim. Yeah. So at Toyota, it's Capstone.
Capstone.
When you get a Capstone, you get all the fanciest stuff in there. And for the new Tundra, there's only two powertrains available. It's all twin turbo V6 3.5 liters now, which, if that sounds vaguely familiar, is pretty much exactly the same configuration as the classic Ford EcoBoost V6 3.5 liter twin turbo, and it makes pretty close to the same power. Depending on which configuration of a Ford you get, sometimes it's slightly more or slightly less power, and slightly more or slightly less torque than the Toyota. In the case of the Tundra that I had, it is so in the Tundra, because there's only the two configurations. The standard iForce twin turbo V6, 389 horsepower and 479 foot-pounds of torque, which is slightly less power, slightly more torque than the most common 400 horsepower version you find on the F-150. And for the iForce Max, which is the hybrid, you get 437 horsepower, 583 foot-pounds of torque, which is quite good, actually. And one of the interesting details, Toyota recommends 87 octane or higher, whereas Ford actually recommends, I think, 91 octane, recommends premium gas. For
so you're the person who gets
EcoBoost
to buy the middle gas.
Yeah.
The middle gas. You are the middle gas.
You are. Who buys the middle gas? It turns out Toyota Tundra, iForce, Capstone, Max, Super Truck.
Well, the 87 is regular. That's actually the low end, unless you're in Colorado where they have 85 octane for some reason. I don't know why, but 87 is in most of the country that's regular gas, and so Toyota just recommends regular, and that's probably why it has slightly less power than the Ford, because in the Ford you can use regular gas. It will just detune the engine a little bit. It'll back off on the spark advance and the timing and everything, and so you'll probably end up with about the same performance. So, in the case of the Toyota, they said, you know, it's fine with regular, and 389 or 437 horsepower, 583 foot pounds is plenty. There's more than enough energy there. There's also a 48 horsepower electric motor that is in between the engine and the transmission, the 10-speed automatic transmission in this thing. And most of the time, you're probably not going to notice that there's even electrification on this thing, which was kind of odd I thought, you know, Toyota, you know, being the originator of modern hybrids, you know, you drive most Toyota hybrids and, you know, the engines are shutting down all the time, you know, and going into electric mode. Anytime you lift off, a lot of times the engine will be shutting down, coasting, and it'll just be regenerating. I found that driving the Tundra, it didn't actually turn off the engine very frequently. In fact, you know, and like, again, you know, you drive a RAV4 or a Prius or a Camry hybrid, you know, pretty much every time you come to a stop, it's shutting off the engine, you know, unless it's really, really cold. And, you know, the temperature during the time I had it was, you know, in the mid to upper 30s to low 40s most of the time, which is fairly chilly. But still, even once the thing is good and warmed up, it very rarely actually shut off the engine when I came to a stop. And most of the time, like if I was at a red light, most of the time it was turning the engine back on well before the light turned green, which I find very unusual for a Toyota hybrid. This one also, like most Toyota hybrids, still has a nickel metal hydride battery rather than a lithium ion battery. Toyota is starting to shift towards lithium batteries in their hybrids. They've used them in the plug-in hybrids. They've used them in some variants of the Prius over the years, but they're mostly still nickel metal hydride, which is cheaper than the lithium batteries, but it's also lower energy density, so the battery's a little bigger, a little heavier. But you know, this Tundra, the four-wheel drive hybrid, is EPA rated at 19 city, 22 highway, 20 combined. And when I've had the F-150 hybrid, which is pretty similar in terms of specs, you know, in terms of power, torque, weight, you know, certainly about roughly the same size, you know, I have typically been able to get at least 20 with it. And I did quite a bit of highway driving with the Tundra. I had a couple of trips back and forth to Detroit, and to Dearborn, to Troy. And I only averaged just over 17 miles per gallon.
Ouch.
Which was kind of unimpressive for a Toyota, certainly for a Toyota hybrid, but, you know, compared to the only other full-size hybrid pickup truck, compared to an F-150 hybrid, it was definitely not as good. I didn't do any towing with it, but let's see, let me find the tow specs. I think the tow specs are roughly the same. Let's see, so 4x4 Crew Max, it will tow, I don't know. Oh, maximum towing capacity, 11,170 pounds. So depending between the 4x2 gas engine and the 4x4 Crew Max hybrid, it's up as much as 12,000 pounds, and this one that I had was 11,170 pounds, which is plenty. I mean, that's about what you're going to get with the Ford as well. So it's in the same ballpark there. So towing is not an issue, unlike with an electric pickup truck. You can tow all day long with this thing. You know, you'll just have to stop for gas, and you can fill up the gas tank pretty quickly. So that's not an issue. You know, in terms of the way the interior felt, you know, I would say that it's certainly a huge upgrade over the previous generation Tundra. The infotainment system is really nice. You get the 14-inch touchscreen. I've complained before about the fact that with that, the new Toyota infotainment system, that you can't have multiple things on the screen at once. You know, you can have navigation or media controls or settings, but you can't have a dual-pane display. Toyota's heard my complaints about this. Maybe someday they'll change it. Probably not. The voice recognition worked great. You know, every time I said, "Hey, Toyota," it recognized my voice and responded, and it generally worked really well. Most, you know, once I had gone through using that and playing around with that, then I plugged in my phone and used Android Auto, and then you get a nice dual pane setup because it's got big screen. So it shows you Google Maps on one pane and your media controls on the other side, and you can quickly toggle back and forth between them just by tapping one side or the other. And so that worked really well. It's also got wireless support for Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. CarPlay also has the ability to show multiple things on the screen at once. As with the other full-size pickups, lots and lots of rear seat room. If you want almost limo-like rear seat comfort, a full-size crew cab pickup is actually a really good way to go. The one I had, the Capstone, also has retracting steps. It had retracting running boards and retracting steps under the corners of the rear bumper. But I couldn't find a way to retract those steps without opening the tailgate. When you open the tailgate, the steps come out so you can step up into the cab. You don't have any of the other fancy stuff like the step that can pull out of the tailgate like you do on the F-150s, or the side steps ahead of the rear wheel arches that you have on some vehicles. But it's a nice touch to have that. It's easier to step up into the thing. You don't have any of the Pro Power on board capabilities that the Fords have. The interior, as I said, is a huge step up from previous Tundras, but still not quite up to the standard of what you get in a Ram. The Ram is still, the class of the field when it comes to premium feeling interiors. Nice leather seats. Lots of room, lots of storage space for all your stuff that you're going to carry in a truck. No cookie table though.
Donut table. Forget it. I'm out.
Burrito table.
And let's see. All in, this one came to $77,390, or $339, sorry. Any guesses on delivery charge?
Okay, I'm picked on this later in this podcast by a person. $1,100. I'm going with $1.
Robbie wins again. It's a truck. It's a truck. So $1,695.
Oh, I wasn't even close.
They're following the...
won, so that's all that matters.
You always win. I feel like at this point you just should throw out a number like 5,000. Throw me a bone, Robbie.
Throw me a bone.
But you can also get the Tundra. Looks like the limited grade starts at $54,000. So these are a little pricey. They're definitely getting up there.
A little pricey.
Yeah. If you like a Toyota truck, a full size Toyota truck. That's just for the hybrid is the $54,000. You can also get the gas engine Tundras starting at $37,000. That's in the ballpark with where the same ballpark is where an F-150 Silverado or Ram 1500 is going to be. So that is the, this one was a 2022, Tundra, hybrid. The 2023 is carryover. No changes yet. If you like a big grill, Toyota's got you covered.
Bam. All the grill in your face.
All the grills.
In your face.
Just get a Maverick.
Hey, I'm not going to argue with that. For most people, a Maverick or a Santa Cruz is all the pickup truck you need.
If you need something a little bigger, just get the Honda something or other. What's it called again?
The Ridgeline?
Ridgeline. Yeah. The Ridgeline. My wife, I think I've told the story before. We were looking for cars and they had the Ridgeline. My wife's like, is this electric? I'm like, no. She's like,
forget it, I'm out.
Rumor has it that there will be an electric version of the Tacoma, the new Tacoma, when it comes out next year.
Well, that'd be nice.
And I've been told by a source that the Tacoma will be revealed in the spring, around April-ish.
I'll be on vacation.
Yeah. Where are you going to be vacationing?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
Somewhere... west,
because from what I understand west. About where it's
going
to be revealed,
go east?
It would be a very nice vacation spot too.
Oh,
we'll talk about that later.
Oh, Well, shoot. That sounds like somewhere I'll actually be. All right.
Anyway,
I don't want to work on my vacation.
Let's move on. So earlier this week, Ford had their they finally revived their annual holiday reception. This is something that certainly, you know, here in Detroit, automakers have up until 2019 was, you know, were doing every year. You know, they would invite all the local media and analysts out for just, you know, casual, you know, spend some time with the executives, have, you know, eat some shrimp, eat some sushi, eat what out, whatever you want, you know, have some drinks, and, you know, some casual conversation with the executives and the PR teams. And so Ford had their reception again for the first time this year since 2019. Jim Farley was there, also had some good conversations with some other folks.
Oh, cool.
But one of the interesting things that, that Jim talked about, is he threw out this idea of, you know, who, you know, what, well, we started off with which was the more important vehicle to Ford, the Model T or the Model A? You know, in the early part, you know, the early 20th century. And while the T certainly, you know, sold in huge numbers and was the first car to really be accessible to the masses, you know, especially as they kept cutting the price year after year to year as they made the production process more efficient. By the middle 1910s, you know, by 1914, 15, 16, it was already starting to get kind of old. It was, you know, it was a very basic car that was, you know, like extremely simple. It was easy for anybody to fix. You know, nothing fancy on there. By that time, by the middle of the 1910s, it was already being superseded by products from other manufacturers that were getting close to the same price, but, you know, significantly more sophisticated, like, you know, the first Chevrolets and Dodges and various other cars. And Farley's argument was that the Model A ultimately was more important to Ford in terms of making sure that Ford was a company that's still around today in the 21st century. And Henry Ford wanted to keep the Model T going in perpetuity. He just wanted to keep cutting the cost out of the Model T and said, that's all the car that people need. You know, they don't need anything more than that. But of course, as we know, people are not rational when it comes to buying vehicles. You know, they want what they want. And, you know, and it was Edsel Ford, Henry's son, that really pushed through the Model A and got the, you know, got the Model A built and into production. And if it hadn't been for Edsel and the Model A, Ford almost certainly would have been bankrupt by 1920. Mm-hmm. It was well on its way there, despite selling countless numbers of Model Ts. And so Farley's telling this story, and he said, does Tesla need an Edsel, Ford? Not Edsel the car, but Edsel Ford.
No one needs an Edsel the car.
Yeah, and if so, who is Tesla's Edsel? Because
so what? You know, so you're saying someone to say you need to. What would the Tesla? What would Edsel?
What's the next generation of Tesla?
So the guy who says next gen, let's bring it.
They don't. Well, that's the thing. I read this article for TechCrunch. I don't know, like 6 months. I don't know. Time doesn't make any sense anymore. But essentially, the article was that Tesla needs a Tim Cook. Tesla needs somebody to take over. To run the, you know, to move Tesla forward, to take over as an adult and run that company, and now investors are saying that essentially,
yeah,
because of the drop in price. I think there's a point where you have somebody who runs a company, who pushes the company to this point, and then they just sort of like, I don't want to say stagnate, but they're not. Yeah, it's a sort of. I mean, the Tesla lineup is pretty stagnant, to be honest. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you got
rumors of a new Model 3 coming out. Yeah,
and the 3 and the Y,
and then there's a semi, which is I don't know why they're getting into that, because Daimler essentially owns that market. Good luck trying to figure that out. He sold a couple of them to Pepsi. Good for you. That's great PR for everybody involved, but it's not a long-term strategy. I think there's, you know, and to be honest, I think Elon Musk is bored with Tesla. I think he's there because he has to be, because he knows that he's tightly intertwined with that company, and his fortune is tightly intertwined with that company as well. I think there needs to be a point where he says, okay, this is a person who's going to be my successor, and he has to make sure that everyone understands that, and who that person is, no clue. It's because you have to be someone who can A, placate Musk while also moving things forward. You have to be someone who's going to be able to talk Musk into A, allowing them to run the company, and B, taking reins of the company and allowing, and Musk saying, yeah, that's fine, which is for Musk, I think we've all seen that's something that's very difficult for him to do. He doesn't really like when people say, well, maybe we should do this. He's like, oh, no, you don't know what you're talking about, which is why, Tesla's had a difficult time keeping, automotive people on staff.
I don't know if they need a person. What's their next thing? They don't have new models coming. Don't they have a new platform that they're working on, though? Theoretically, battery. Like a new, cheaper platform for its vehicles. It's supposed to make them, take the pricing down and everything.
Yeah, I mean, they've talked for years about, launching a $25,000 EV.
But then he said they wasn't going to do it. Then they came out a few months ago and was like, we're not going to do that. And we're just like, well.
Yeah. The parallels to the Model T, I think, are interesting. Tesla's been putting a lot of effort into trying to simplify and take cost out of the Model 3 and the Y, especially the Y, which is selling much better than the 3 now. Moving to away from having a bunch of stampings that they have to weld together to these giant castings for the front and rear structure, the structural battery, all of which are good things that need to happen. But in this modern age, can you just keep iterating on the same design, the same basic idea, continually tweaking it? Or at some point, do you need to do something fundamentally different?
The car buyer, we want new and shiny. That's all there is to it. I mean, they're losing market share. They still own the market, but they're losing market share.
They've dropped from 85% 2 years ago to 60% of the EV market in the U.S.
Yeah, so they're losing share, and some of that has to do with the fact that it's the same car, and it's the same car, and it's the same car. And there's an EV6 out there, and there's a Ioniq 5, and there's a Mach-E, and there's all these other vehicles. There's the Equinox coming, and it's the same car, and it's the same car. And we like, we like new and shiny things. Yeah. I mean, that's literally our job, is to go out and drive new and shiny things and tell people yes or no. Should you or shouldn't you buy it? And at some point, if you don't have the new shiny thing, why am I going to re-review? I can't just keep re-reviewing the Tesla Model Y. People look out there, and there's the buying cars is such an emotional thing, because it is a lot of money. So you want something that you really want, and maybe you don't want something that's been around for a while. Maybe you want something new and shiny, and that's your prerogative, that's your money. And I think, looking at that drop in market share, I think Tesla's hopefully realizing that. Regardless of how you feel about Elon Musk, there's a lot of good, nice, smart people that work at Tesla who work hard, and every day they show up to work and they want to build a car for a better tomorrow. And if there's a new version of that car that keeps them employed, that's great.
All right. Well, any thoughts on, we know a lot of people in the industry. Any thoughts on who would be a good successor to Musk as CEO?
It's a loaded question, because they have to get along with Musk. It has to be someone he likes, and so then you're like, okay, so who's that? Who is that?
I don't think it needs to be someone necessarily that's an industry person, though. Given Tesla and given the way that Musk operates, you know, I don't know that he'd necessarily, that might not be a good thing or a bad thing, but just he might not be looking to like, I'm going to pull this auto industry guy who knows all about cars here. You know, he might want someone who's a little bit, I don't know, not quite from the industry, but still knows how to build a company. So I don't know.
Well, for what it's worth, I mean, part of the problem with getting a replacement for Musk over the last decade has been that he has held a very large share of Tesla. Usually somewhere around 23-24% of all the shares belong to Elon. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the last year, and particularly the last 6 months, he has sold off almost half of his stake in Tesla. He now only owns about 13% of Tesla shares. And because, you know, he's sold off a bunch to buy Twitter and everything else. So in terms of his voting power, you know, and because Tesla, unlike Facebook and some other companies, there is no dual class shareholding, you know, or Ford for that matter. There's no dual class shares. So every vote gets, you know, the same votes. So he's only got half as many votes now as he did a year ago. And so, you know, maybe there's actually, you know, maybe whoever, you know, if the board decides to do something and make a change, maybe that person doesn't necessarily have to get along that well with Elon.
I think there's, well, the fact that he's reducing his stake, it's helpful for someone else to come new, to come in. Because if he has like this gigantic 20% stake in the company, everything that person does is going to be second-guessed via Twitter, period. Mm-hmm. Everything, he's going to lambast them. He's going to go after them. He's going to say, this is dumb. I never would have done that, blah, 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 blah. That's just Elon's MO. That's just how he works. But as he loses stake, he can still lambast it, but he won't have the voting shares to do anything about it. And I think, you know, and it's weird because recently he said, he's like, you know, it's a public company. It's important that it's a public company because if I'm not doing a good job, you should like get rid of me. And you're like, okay, hey, why are you saying this? Because you just took another company private talking about how important it was. And B, I really think.
And he tried to take Tesla private not that long ago.
I really think he doesn't want to run Tesla anymore, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it'll be easier for him to sort of like be removed. I don't know. I don't think he wants to run Tesla anymore. I think he's bored.
I don't know that he doesn't want to run Tesla. I think he's sort of focused on the Twitter thing as a new toy.
Maybe he's kind of like, you know, where Bill Gates was 20 years ago when he stepped down as CEO of Microsoft and, you know, wanted to do something else.
I think that's where he's at, but he can't. A, his sort of like drive won't allow him to just walk away without like some insane idea, without some insane person coming in, or without, I don't know. Maybe we get what's his name from Stellantis from PSA.
What?
Carlos Tavares.
You get Carlos.
Oh gosh. Carlos.
You just need somebody with a big ego, a big personality, everybody high up in
any company 's got a big ego.
Yeah, you need a big personality. You need someone big and sort of larger in life to come in.
You can't just have some milquetoast executive come in on Tesla.
And he needs someone like Tim Cook who can take care of everything, but it needs to be Tim Cook with like on Ritalin.
With an edge.
With an edge. You know what I mean? It needs to be somebody who's had maybe a little bit too much meth with their French their Frosted Flakes. Someone's gonna come in and take care of all like
sprinkle a little white powder on their Frosted Flakes.
Take care of all the daily and can smooth over a lot of like hurt feelings in the industry so they can hire someone who can make manufacturing better, someone who can, you know, make the service centers better, you know, someone who has a lot of experience, you know, hire those people back while also still walking out on stage and being like, we make the greatest cars in the universe, blah, 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 essentially.
Well, with that, why don't we transition to the
Steve
the next
Ballmer.
Thing.
They need Steve Ballmer. That's what they need.
I don't know if they need Ballmer. But
electric cars. He just comes out.
I think that's a good place to transition. You know, recently there was a report out of Bloomberg that Apple has yet again delayed their plans to launch a car. You know, they've been working on this since at least 2015.
100 years.
And, you know, supposedly they wanted to, they didn't want to launch something until they could launch a vehicle with no steering wheel and no pedals, you know, no controls, and, you know, just go all autonomous. And now they've come to the realization that, yeah, that's not going to be realistic.
Anytime soon.
Anytime soon. And, you know, thinking about that, you know, if Apple really wants to get into the car business, instead of spending these billions of dollars that they've spent over the last 8 years, shouldn't they maybe just buy Lucid?
Lucid, it has the sensors on it already. They all show up at LiDAR. They all have radar. They all have cameras.
They have
high-end. They have a car.
They have a factory.
They have a factory. They build stuff. Yeah,
Apple employees working at Lucid, Apple employees.
And especially the biggest problem that Lucid has had over the past year since they actually started production has been supply chain, getting the parts that they need to build enough cars to deliver them to the customers that have ordered them. And who has been better at handling supply chain over the last 25 years than Apple and Tim Cook?
Yeah. They got a factory. They got everything. It's turnkey.
Yeah.
You come in, you buy Lucid, you get...
Boom, you know, you got a car.
Boom, you got a car. You let the people who are doing it continue to do their job. You know, maybe make a super white one that looks like an iPod from, you know, wherever.
I was literally just trying to find... Oh, there it is. That original image of the little Apple car. The tiny little... It was like this little bubble. It looked like it was smiling at you. It was a teeniest little thing. Do you remember that?
That's one of many renderings that people have created over the years.
That's the one... No, there was one they had... were taking people out for drives or something.
No, that was Google.
Apple never did. Is it Google?
Is that
Google.
What
you're
thinking?
The little Firefly.
It's the Google one I'm thinking. It's not Apple. Yeah. Apple's did nothing. They don't even have that cute little car.
For a company like Apple that likes to sell premium products that are really nicely designed, nicely built, the Lucid Air, and I mean, it's even got the right name for Apple. I mean, Apple's got iPad Airs and MacBook Airs.
It's like it's a marriage just destined to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the Lucid Air seems, you know, like it, if I didn't know that it was Derek Jenkins, you know, it seems like something that would have been designed for Apple. It seems like the perfect fit. And, you know, last time I checked a couple days ago, you know, Lucid's market cap was only about $13 billion. So, I mean, Apple could easily buy that for pocket change.
Nothing.
Not a problem.
How much money does Apple have in the bank? I'm just looking up Apple Money Bank.
I think it's about $70 billion now because they've been doing a lot of stock buybacks.
Yeah, they have a lot of. They're doing okay. Apple, yeah. We're doing okay.
Yeah, they have the cash. They can handle it. But the question is, should they do it? Should they just give up on their own thing, or maybe scale back their own thing? You know, focus on the software, and just buy Lucid and fix their supply chain problems and be done with it.
I don't understand. I don't know how the software is going to help them. To be honest, I mean, we have Android Automotive, so that's, you know, and everyone's already they should have done that maybe. And then what? They make the.
Well, I mean, Apple would want to have their own user experience.
But, I mean, if they decide not to make a car, if they decide just to go into software, like, who's going to do that? Everyone's already making their own software, and they're still
right. Everyone has it.
Yeah.
Apple hasn't shown anything that anyone should be excited about. I mean, they might have something amazing, but they haven't shown anybody it. So, just buy Lucid, I guess. Just buy Lucid.
There you go, Tim. So, you can have that one for
Problem
free.
Problem solved. There
Problem
you go.
Solved.
Enjoy.
All right,
Lucid.
Sticking with batteries for a minute, Redwood Materials, founded by J.B. Straubel, the former CTO of Tesla, is a battery recycling and materials processing company, and they announced this week they've got a small plant in Nevada where they're currently processing. It's about half and half of their input is half is from used EV batteries and scrap from battery production that they get from Tesla or Panasonic, really, and from AESC in their factory in Tennessee where they supply the batteries for the Nissan Leaf. And then the other half is consumer electronics batteries, and they reprocess all that. And turn it back into materials that can go straight back into the battery manufacturing process as cathode and anode materials. So you don't have to dig up more stuff out of the ground. You can just recycle the old batteries. They've got a plant in Nevada that is producing enough material for about 6 gigawatt hours a year worth of batteries, which is about 60,000 cars, roughly. And they, 60,000 or 600,000, 60,000. And they are, they announced this week that they're going to build a new plant, recycling plant in Charleston, South Carolina, $3.5 billion, capacity for, 100 gigawatt hours a year, which is enough for about 1 million EV batteries annually.
A million.
One
million batteries. And it's near where everyone else is. So
yeah.
That's smart. I've talked to JB a few times back when he was at Tesla. He's very not Elon. He's very quiet.
He's the opposite of Elon.
He actually
understands the technology. He's soft spoken.
That as well. Yeah, he's very soft spoken. He understands technology. There's no I guess salesmanship. He's just
Elon's not soft spoken. You think he's salesy? Bah.
he's a quiet man.
Individual.
When I heard about Redwood Materials, I'm like, that makes all the sense in the world for him to do that. So I think it's, you know, this is good. Less digging things up, the better.
Yeah.
That's a technical term in the mining industry.
That was one of the ways that they got it through. We will make sure there's less digging things up. Well, let's give them the permits.
Yeah.
Less digging things.
Takes fewer permits to build a recycling factory than it does to
dig
a hole in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Mazda. Coming up end of January, they're going to be revealing their next new product. It's the CX-90 to presumably replace the CX-9. It's 10x better. It's going to be their first product in North America with their new inline 6-cylinder gas engine. But it's also going to be available as a plug-in hybrid, their first North American plug-in hybrid. This is going to be a big three-row crossover. Any thoughts?
People do love a third row.
He'll be happy. Everybody loves. I mean, as long as it drives like a Mazda, you know.
Yeah, it's got inline six. Should be nice.
Yeah, it's supposedly going to be performance oriented.
According to the press release, it says so. Responsive performance and driving dynamics that define Mazda vehicles. Says the PR. That'll be great. I mean, I think it's a great idea. I think it'll be good for them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'll be going out to California at the end of January for the event for the reveal of this thing.
Yes, I'm going to be skipping that one. I have other obligations, so I couldn't make that one.
Okay. Also, this week when I was in Dearborn before the holiday party. Took a tour of the Ford Rouge Electric Vehicle Center where they build the F-150 Lightnings,
mm-hmm.
and they're in the process of doing their capacity expansion from 80,000 units a year to 150,000 units a year, which by early fall next year should be ready. Basically what they've done is the building, they've added on a big section at one end of the building, a big section at the other end of the building, and once they got the walls up, then they knocked out the walls at either end of the original building.
Oof.
And they're going to stretch out the assembly line, put more stations in there so they can build twice as many trucks.
Trucks.
The problem is they're also cranking up the prices on these trucks. And by the time they get to 150,000 a year production rate, are people even going to be able to afford these things? Because remember that $40,000 Ford Lightning Pro that they launched with last spring? It's now $56,000.
That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've done it in pieces. I'm looking at this story.
They've done it a couple times, a little bit here, a little bit here.
If you already ordered it, you're good. Don't worry about it. But if you're planning on ordering, you're going to pay more.
Just get a Maverick.
That should be the title of this episode. Just get a Maverick, guys. Just get a Maverick.
But you want to VinFast? Get a Maverick. You're thinking about buying about think of a, losing,
think of a
losing,
Miata.
Just
yeah,
get a Maverick.
Get a Maverick.
Well, you know, I mean, fortunately for Ford, you know, their first competition is going to be the Silverado EV. And the first version of that that's coming out, you know, well, they're going to launch the work truck in the spring. And then in the fall, they're going to launch the RST, which is when they announced it last year. They said that one was going to be like $105,000, just slightly cheaper than the Hummer EV. So, you know, at $56,000, the Lightning still seems like kind of a bargain. We'll see how Ram prices out the Ram 1500 EV, which is going to be debuting as a concept at CES in a couple of weeks.
It's not like the Lightning is overpriced at 58. It just was like, it was a steal at its original price.
Right.
You know, and it was like, "Whoa, this is so cool! People can actually afford this." It's like, "Oh, now it's well, okay. Now you got to spend $56,000 on your truck."
And that's,
now
that's becomes, for a version that only has 240 miles of range.
Right. This is our most like baby version of the.
Yeah, if you want,
Lightning.
If you want the extended range Pro, that's going to be another $10,000 on top of that.
Yeah.
So now you're into the mid-60s.
So it's not like it's. I don't feel like it's overpriced. I just felt like it before. It was almost like a no-brainer before, and that was such an affordable number for a truck.
Yeah.
Now, 56,000, it's not like it's outrageous, but suddenly, like, okay, you got to plan for that a little more. You know, that's a big increase in the price. It's a little sad.
All right. And then finally, VinFast, which we've talked about before. Looks like, you know, when they promised you that it was going to be here by the end of the year, they were right.
It's, well, they promised me October, November, December. So
well,
they made the December. It was just whoever said December, you win. Yeah. It's like the Price is Right thing. You win December, whichever person told me that at VinFast. Woohoo.
The question is, like what we just talked about with the F-150, the base price of this thing, if you want to buy it with the battery, if you don't want to do the battery subscription,
which is ridiculous.
The VF8
which is ridiculous.
City Edition is starting at $55,000 with only 180 miles of range.
See, you're just kicking yourself in the face with this. It's 108. The U.S. market does not want anything under 200 miles.
180 miles of range for $55,000.
And that's from a 90 kilowatt hour battery pack.
So it's inefficient and it's expensive. 90 kilowatt. That's too. Oh my gosh,
that's the same size as the extended range battery in the Mach-E. Yeah, and this is a vehicle that looks like it's probably a little, maybe slightly smaller than that. They say it's about CRV size, Honda CRV size.
Yeah, that feels
so
about
pretty,
right.
Pretty close to the same size, I guess.
Yeah,
but you know, 180 miles of range for $55,000, or you will have the option of paying only $42,000 up front. And then paying $170 a month to lease the battery.
Which, it's so outrageous.
It's a bad deal.
I'll be really curious to see if they release the breakdown of who does the battery lease versus who's just, I'm just going to buy this car. Like, I don't know why the numbers, like you said, Robbie, do not make sense for the leasing option. Like, they don't.
They have so much money, the VIN... corporate,
the VIN group. Over,
the VIN group has so much money. U.S. buyers do not want anything under 200 miles. Period. I mean, they want 250.
Right.
And to come into the market with a big SUV, or not big SUV, but a crossover SUV, whatever you want to call it, and say, oh, it only has 180 miles, which really means 150 because you're not charging it up to, you know, 100%.
Right.
And saying, hey, can we have $55,000 for this? And then everyone just looks at you and says, but there's all these other cars that have more range for the same or less money. You can get...
I mean, for $55,000, you can get a really nice Kia EV6, you know, with all-wheel drive.
Yeah. 252
it's
miles.
It's tough. I said this from the beginning. I feel like things were rushed so much with this. And even that, it's like... You guys, we can give it to him right now with 180 miles. Whoa. What do we have to do to bring it over 200? Like, take a deep breath and figure out what they want in the U.S.
Slow down.
I don't know. Maybe it's going to be like this unbelievable, like, smashing success, and everybody's going to be driving a VinFast tomorrow. But I won't.
Or maybe it'll be more like when Daewoo launched in the U.S. market.
Yeah, I have my fears for it, and it's
you have to have a good first impression. That's all there is to it. I mean, you know, the Hyundai Excel was a trash car, and people It was dirt cheap, but also people are still thinking about the Hyundai Excel when they think about it.
And you know, people, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day. They were saying how good Hyundai and Kia are now compared to what they were once upon a time. And the argument would be, well, you know, VinFast could do that too. They could come in kind of meh and work their way up. I'm like, yeah, but do you realize there's still people who won't touch Hyundai and Kia because they remember the old ones? And no amount of you saying, can you just 90s. Go look
and,
at...
And it took 20 years for Hyundai to get over that and, you know,
There's still people who think, and like a good number, like, really? You'd recommend a Hyundai? Yeah, I would. People, like a large number of people look at you like you're nuts when you recommend a Hyundai or a Kia to them because they have these very old views of what they were when they were first came to the U.S. It is hard to shake that. Yeah. I worry that VinFast isn't going to be able to shake that when there's so many good options. There's so many longer range better pricing that make them a better value.
That first impression sticks so hard, especially with cars. It's such a tough thing to shake, and
and it's the second biggest, thing that people buy. The second most expensive thing that people buy after their home.
Right. So you buy a house, that's a big deal. You buy a car, that's the second biggest deal. Like you spend a ton of money on a car. It's not like people are throwing around $50,000-$60,000. Like, oh, let's just do this again in a couple of years. Like you're going to have that vehicle for a while, and I just don't. It's weird because I wanted this to be better than it was. I'm almost angry at it. I wanted it to be better. I wanted it to be something where I walked away and was so just impressed. I'm like, guys, I don't know. I would be very curious once consumers in the U.S. get their hands on it and start driving it and talking about it. I will be curious what the public response. Maybe it's going to be entirely different than my point of view. That could very easily be it.
I've had a couple of people, regular people, just ask me about VinFast, and I'm like, well, the battery thing just makes zero sense. They're like,
For that same $42,000, you can buy a base Hyundai Ioniq 5 that is going to have more range. You could be fairly confident that it's going to be a good vehicle and last. For $34,000, Ioniq 5, Kona EV.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot more range. Yeah.
It's hard to take a chance. Like you said, it's a lot of money. Sam's second biggest purchase that most people make aside from their house. So when you buy Hyundai or Kia, these better vehicles than what VinFast is offering for pricing and all these different reasons, you're pretty sure that Hyundai and Kia aren't going anywhere tomorrow, and they've been here for a long time. And there's a certain I feel like this is a brand that people know, right? It's not like Hyundai and Kia, like, who are they? People know them. Or you can get this car from an automaker that is completely new to the United States that no one really knows anything about, that you've only heard of if really you're paying attention to the EV space as a consumer, right? Most people haven't heard of VinFast, and take a chance and spend more money for less and do that.
Yeah. I mean, it took a long time for Tesla to get where it is, and they had they had the Roadster, which was sort of like, okay, we have this thing. You know, the Model S, they didn't sell a lot of them, but they had to use that in order to get people to buy the Model 3. And the Model S was, when it came out, it was a great car. It was a great EV. Mm-hmm. You were like, oh my gosh, this is, it's
great
fun.
Great range.
Yep. It looks nice. It's nice to drive. All the things that you wanted from a car that happened to be an EV. And so it made sense for people like, well, now they have the Model 3 and they'll buy this. Or now they have the Model Y. Yeah, you got to come big. Go big or go home, VinFast. So
we could all be proven wrong in another couple of months.
Once we get a chance to spend more time with this thing,
and once we get more than 10 minutes behind the wheel, or however much time y'all got, 30 seconds.
I got about 12 minutes, Robbie. So don't underestimate my experience here with this vehicle.
Yeah. So there's that.
So you drove slow to maximize your time.
Get the most out of
it. I did. I drove really slow. Also, if I drove a normal speed, it would have been 4 minutes.
Extend that range so you get that.
All right. Let's answer a few listener questions. And just a reminder that we're migrating away from the Twitter presence. There is a Mastodon account now for Wheel Bearings. It's Wheel Bearings Cast at federated.press. If you want to follow us on Mastodon, you can also just follow Wheel Bearings Media. I set up the site the WordPress site with an ActivityPub plugin, so you can follow that if you're on Mastodon. And you can send us emails feedback at wheelbearings.media, or just use the contact us link on the site. It goes to the same place. And let's hit a couple of questions here. First up from Stephen Kimmel. This came in yesterday. It was an article yesterday in the Wall Street Journal by Christopher Mims. Today's Wall Street Journal has an article that suggests EV makers should change strategy and start introducing lighter models with smaller batteries with lower range, roughly 150 miles. But importantly, with faster battery charging rates and total times of 15 minutes. The author argues this would offer the market cheaper, more efficient EVs. Consumers would be more likely to adopt because of affordability and reduced consideration of range anxiety as the primary spec for model comparison. If you ran an EV company, would you pursue this option as part of your long-term strategy? Are any manufacturers heading this way?
I would not pursue that.
I'm looking at the wrong thing. There we go.
It's
logical, but it's not the U.S. The U.S. buying public does not think logically. That's the thing. Or we'd all be driving many SEs, to be completely honest.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in other parts of the world, in China, in Europe, in Japan, they certainly do that. There are cars.
It makes a lot of sense.
One of the best selling cars in China is the Wuling Mini, made by one of GM's ventures over there. It's dirt cheap. I think it has a range of about 80 or 90 miles. Sells like hotcakes over there. There are certainly cars that fit this spec now. I mean, the Nissan Leaf, the base Nissan Leaf. I think it's now down to like $28,000 or $29,000.
Mm-hmm.
Has a range of 150 miles, and nobody buys it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it won't charge in 15 minutes. But the problem is for American consumers, especially they have this irrational need to
buy for the edge case.
Yeah, to buy for the edge case rather than what they actually use on a daily basis.
Yeah,
I mean, although that 150, logically, it's going to cover almost everyone every day for how much they drive. Doesn't matter how quickly it'll charge. If it's only 150, let's say you're getting 125 out of that, people are going to freak out and think, oh my God, I need more than that.
Yeah.
Even if they only need more than that, once every 6 months, they still don't want to have to deal with it for that once every 6 months when they do need more than that. And what we have already here sort of proves that people don't. Yeah, people buy them, but not in any kind of volume.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't. It's not our market. It's not our. Yeah, it's just not our attitude in the U.S. Better or worse, it's just not how we're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I love a Mini SE. I think it's probably one of the funnest EVs out there. It's probably the best Mini really right now. Mm-hmm. But and they sell a good share of them, but it's definitely not anything that's it's a blip.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for Mini, but it's a blip in the general,
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, logically, Stephen, your argument makes perfect sense. But unfortunately, the market is not logical. Consumers are not logical. And until we have 150-mile EVs with 350-kilowatt charging, and we've got 350-kilowatt chargers everywhere.
Until it's as easy to find one of those as it is to find a gas station. You can go to a corner in a city or in town and find a gas station on all four corners. Until you can do that with chargers.
And maybe by 2030, with the new chargers that are going in, they're being funded by the infrastructure bill, maybe this will happen. But right now, we're not there.
I think it's going to take a while for. I think it needs people to have their second or third generation EV, their second or third EV, when they realize, I'm going to. And automakers have actually Volkswagen. I think Volkswagen's talked about this with me. I think a couple other automakers, I can't remember who, have talked about in the future. Do you think people will be happier with less battery? They're like, yeah, once they figure it out. because less battery means, you know, a smaller battery means it's going to be less expensive. You know, why am I paying all this extra money for this giant battery for all the range that I don't need? But that's not going to happen right now.
Yeah, but you're right, Robbie. It's someone's second EV or third EV when they know how to live with them and they're more comfortable with them. But you figure you think about how quickly people buy cars, you're talking a ways before most people are going to be on their second or third EV, and enough people on their second or third EV to understand enough to go, yeah, sure, I'm fine with 100 miles, 120 miles.
Yeah.
So, you know?
All right. Next up is Jake Robb. And he sent us a fairly long email, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. The first couple of paragraphs are chiding.
Okay, you know what, Jake Robb? I'm pointing my finger at the screen in anger. Jake, I did the right thing this week, and I still got Scrooged on the stupid destination charge. So,
but at least
it's a panicky moment. I'm like, what did Robbie do? What did he say? What did he go? Oh my God, which way do I go? I get it. I'm never going to be on a game show. So, tack with you, Jake Robb.
I do my best.
I might panic on occasion.
Jake is trying to help you with your.
He's not. He's horrible, man. I hate him.
We love you, Jake.
He picked on the fact that I am terrible at it, and I do exactly the wrong thing every time. Just in terms of strategy, I'm fully aware. I panic half the time in deciding what I'm going
to
say.
If anything, I should be angry with Jake because he's trying to help you.
Yeah, that's so true. I should like him. I know you're trying to help Jake. I'm just a little bitter.
So now that we've consumed all the time we would have spent by not reading the first couple paragraphs of the email. Dive into the question. I've been listening since back in the Autoblog days, lost you for a while until Casey List guessed it on Wheel Bearings, but then went back and caught all the episodes I'd missed. Thank you for that, Jake. I started supporting on Patreon as soon as I heard it was a thing, and I'm still looking to join the Discord soon. Our family has a 2018 Buick Regal Tourer Essence.
Nice.
Fabulous car. Love that car.
Mm-hmm.
When we sought out and bought our recommendation on your recommendation some years ago, it's really fantastic. Well, I'm glad it worked out for you. It's also our second rebadged Opel. Before that, we had a 2009 Saturn Aura XR 3.6. I miss that engine. A V6 powered Tourer would be great. Since the Tourer is now out of production, nobody is selling Opels, rebadged or otherwise, in the U.S. anymore, and you never know when you'll need another car. I'm always on the lookout for potential replacements. I've had some great fortune in the job market in the last couple of years, so I can spend quite a bit, but my wife and I are really picky. To be specific, we like wagons. Therein lies the problem. Not that we consider wagons a problem, but that's the challenge, let's put it that way.
Yes, very few of them.
We don't like to be high up on the road. Our Tourer has a 40-20-40 split rear seat, which means our girls, 4 and 8, can sit in the back in their car seat and booster, respectively, and in the middle can still be down to accommodate our skis. All four of us are avid skiers. I'd really like my next car to be electric and to have nothing to do with any unhinged billionaires. In the wagon space, there's the Taycan Sport Turismo and Cross Turismo, and there's the EV6. I think I'd love the Taycan, but I worry that we'd be underwhelmed by the EV6 for the money, based largely on Monroe Live's take. Do either of these have a 40-20-40 split seat or a pass-through? Are there any more EV wagons on the horizon? I'd love an electric equivalent of the V70 or A6 Audi Avant, and I could probably swing a Taycan on my new salary, but it would be borderline irresponsible. Speaking of irresponsible, I kind of love the Lucid Air. I can't tell if it has any sort of pass-through we could use. I heard somewhere, maybe you guys said that Lucid, that it handles like a Lotus, which is BS, of course. But how much? How much BS?
How much BS?
You can always say you love it when you get to drive it, but I don't think you've shared any actual driving impressions outside of its acceleration. What's it like? What can you compare it to? How does it stack up compared to, say, a CTSV Blackwing? Love the show.
Okay, I'll compare it to the Lucid to something. I like the Lucid because I think it's more refined in terms of the ride and handling than the CTSV Blackwing. I just think it's a better looking interior. It's more modern. It feels like a higher end car. The Cadillac has that flashy kind of, I think they're a little crass looking almost sometimes. It gets so flashy. The Lucid feels very much more like a refined luxury in terms of look and in terms of ride. I think it's a more refined ride. I think it's a little more well-mannered. It's not... Cadillacs just don't have that refinement. And Lucid, I mean, like you said, the acceleration is out of the world, out of this world, if you want to do that. But just in everyday driving, I think it's got very crisp, very controlled handling that make it a better daily driver, especially if you're taking it like on a road trip or something. I think it's a better daily driver. Yeah. So there's your comparison a little bit more for Lucid. Hopefully that helps. Add in, gentlemen.
What you said. I think it handles very well for its size and what it's doing, but it's also very comfortable. I was really impressed with the performance when I had it driving it around, the Grand Touring performance and how well it handled the corners while also giving you a really nice ride. I will say that on Wednesday I'm getting the Touring.
Ooh.
The second least expensive vehicle, so not the Pure. Yeah. But the Touring. So I'm getting the Touring on the 21st. So what's that make? Oh, I guess we probably won't be doing things on Christmas. Anyway, but the next podcast...
I'm not planning on it, Robbie.
The next podcast, I should be able to answer... I'll look in the back for the split, and I can give you what the drive impressions are for the, you know, something that's not going to cost you $150,000-something. So that'll...
And I'm just looking at the photo of the trunk from my last drive in the Lucid, and it does have a pass-through from the trunk. So it's not a 60-40... The 60-20-40, but it has a little hole. Yeah, so you can shove your skis through there.
Yeah,
so that is good.
Ski
and,
hole.
And thankfully, modern skis are not 3 meters long anymore. So you should have no problem at all fitting the skis through there. As for the EV6,
did Doug not like the EV6?
No, he was referring to Sandy Monroe. Not liking the EV6
and the EV6 for the money.
I disagree with Sandy on this one. I disagree with Sandy on a lot of stuff, but particularly on the EV6. I think he's just wrong. I think the EV6 is fantastic, I would highly recommend that one as well. I don't think it doesn't have a three-way split.
Back rear.
Let's see.
I don't think it does. I agree too. I think it's a great. Like you said, you'd be underwhelmed for the money. It's not as like fancy and like as something like a Porsche. Of course, you're paying what you're paying way the heck more for. But yeah. I feel like it has a really good looking interior. I feel like it's a more upscale interior. It is not luxury car level. Absolutely not. But it definitely. I don't find it like. Tragically horrible or anything. It's nice, especially like having just driven the GT. It felt like a nice little performance sports car. I like the EV6. I wouldn't not recommend
the regular
that.
One. I guess you want the all-wheel drive so you don't have to put chains on your car when you go up to the mountains. But 250 still, something can, miles. If you want the GT, you can get more.
And you can get the GT is only all-wheel drive. The rest of them offer all-wheel drive. Yeah. If you want it, you can get it. I like that. I disagree as well. I would not take that off the list. I think that's a great car.
Yeah, give it a go drive.
Yeah, go drive it. Go drive it.
It's tough right now because if you go to the, like any Kia Kia Hyundai site, they're like, hey, we don't have a lot. But I keep seeing them all over the place. Like they're like, oh, we don't have.
Well, they sell them as fast as they arrive.
Yeah, they're selling.
As soon as they roll off the truck, they're gone.
Go find someone who has one and drive it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Good luck.
As far as other stuff coming, I'm sure there will be. I wouldn't be surprised if there is perhaps an i5 Touring coming, a BMW i5 Touring. The new 5 Series is coming next year, there will be an electric variant of that, that's out there. The i4 might be a little smaller than you want, but it's a liftback, it's a hatchback, it's not quite a wagon, but it's there. But if there's an i5 Touring, that might be a good option for you.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if we don't see like an electric Volvo V60 in the next couple of years. There's certainly going to be the XC.
Will they bring it here though?
Probably the EX60.
Hopefully they will. I mean, more and more EVs coming here. Bring it here.
Yeah. I'm guessing we will see more, in this form factor, or at least in something akin to the EV6 kind of form factor, where it's you know.
It's a wagon.
It's a wagon. You know, they call it a crossover, but, you know.
But it's a wagon.
It's a low-riding crossover rather than.
You sit pretty low in the EV6.
Yeah.
Compared to.
Which is one of the reasons why I actually prefer it over the Hyundai. You know, so I would definitely take a look at the EV6, you know. And I agree with what you said, Nicole, about the Lucid versus the Cadillac. You know, it definitely has a more refined feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a fantastic car.
Yeah. That's another one that's worth getting your hands on and checking it out and driving it a little bit just to see. I know it's like you said, Sam, it's so hard to get your hands on anything to give it a test drive, but try to get, you know, were you talking about like planning, oh gosh, I suddenly need a car. Well, try to drive them where you don't need them yet, you know, so you at least have a little idea what they're like before you get stuck in a spot where you have to pick one and you can't necessarily test drive it.
Yeah.
One more question from Jim Heaton. Are there any hatchbacks in Southeast Michigan on the lot generally available at MSRP or below?
Oh.
Not having any luck finding inventory.
No.
Latest failure was trying to find a Bolt. We would be perfectly happy with a BEV, plug-in hybrid, fuel cell, or ICE vehicle, but ideally it would be small in size and park in downtown Ann Arbor, and a hatchback for utility.
So all poor Jim wants is like, I just want a hatchback. I don't care what it is. Is there one anywhere? I'll take whatever you've got.
Are there no Golfs?
GTI is probably going to be, you might find a GTI on a VW dealership. Maybe.
Look up markups.org. So that's going to help you like figure out where you're going to find a car that's not going to get reamed when it comes to the markups. So go to markups.org. So that should help you find one at MSRP or below, hopefully. And then from that, good luck.
Yeah.
Buying a car, man. It's the worst time to buy a car.
It's tough.
Maybe the closest to what you're looking for, if you can't find the, although you probably won't find one in Michigan, is the Hyundai Kona EV.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. I don't think Hyundai sells the Accent hatchback anymore in the U.S. Let's see. Kia. Does Kia sell the Rio hatchback anymore?
I think it's just the sedan, isn't it?
You might find like a Chevy Sonic somewhere still in inventory somewhere, but I doubt it. They're probably all gone. You know, Bolt.
It's
Bolt,
just hard.
Yeah, Bolt or Hyundai Ioniq or Hyundai Kona EV are probably the best options for you. Oh, Toyota Corolla hatchback.
Oh,
there's another one.
There you go.
Oh, they do still Rio hatchback. There is a Rio. I just double checked.
Oh, okay.
There's a Rio 5-door. So
yeah, try Kia. Try the Kona if you can find an EV, or also the Honda Civic is available as a hatchback. Doesn't really look much like a hatchback. It looks pretty much the same profile as the sedan now, but you know it doesn't. You know, it's not a 3-box design. So the Honda Civic is a fantastic car. So
yeah,
you know, definitely take a look at the Civic or the Toyota Corolla hatchback as well. Those are probably about your only options, you know, in a smallish hatchback anymore at this stage. Pretty much everything else has been discontinued. You know, Nissan still has, you know, the Versa and the Sentra, but they're only available as sedans now. No hatchbacks there. Is there anybody else? No. I mean, Ford dropped all their small cars. GM has pretty much dropped everything. Stellantis hasn't had anything in years. If you can wait until early 2024, the Fiat 500e is coming back.
I know. You said Stellantis, I saw the same thing, but you got a little wait for it.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be about 15 months till that one's back. That's about all there is out there. Any other thoughts? What might be out there?
No, I'm like literally looking around. I was just checking, and I can only find some of these cars you're saying with it like 60 miles away from me in New Hampshire. As I'm Googling, this is hard to find.
You might also look for the Hyundai Venue. Yeah, I mean it's technically a crossover, but it's really a hatchback. Or the Nissan Kicks is also a really good choice.
Robbie, how accurate is this markups.org? Is it really accurate?
It's pretty good. Now I just realized they now charge in order to use
you
it.
You can get some detail.
Really?
I just
you got to pay a markup to check markups.org.
Yeah,
you got to
pay like there's like a monthly subscription now.
It does, but you can look at it, but you just have to. It doesn't let you search as well because I managed to find it.
Yeah,
you can get yourself a Hyundai Kona in California currently for a $14,000 markup.
Yeah, it's pretty. I did an article about them, or I did an article about buying a car right now, and I mentioned them, and then they reached out because I said, well, there's also the you never know if the dealership is trying to game the system, and the founder sent me a message. He's like, oh no, we have things set up so they can't game our system. So because I was talking about if I wanted to buy an Ioniq 5. There's a place in Palm Springs that is selling Ioniq 5s without a markup. So I have to go all the way to Palm Springs. So I fly to Palm Springs and buy an Ioniq 5 and then I drive it home. And so but I mean, if you're paying $10 a month and it saves you, $10,000, I guess it's not
right.
Really.
It's a pretty,
I've been using it for articles. Obviously I haven't used it to buy any, cars because I have a car. And again, buying a car right now is give it a go. I mean, even if you just do $10 for 1 month, if you can find something that helps you.
And then, if it helps you, $10 is going to be chump change compared to the thousands this could save you.
Yeah, if it helps you.
I mean, there's also, you could also look at the, if you want something a little nicer than the Hyundai Venue, the Kona, the gas Kona. Kona is also really good too.
It's a good little car. That's how I end up with the regular. I really like the gas Kona.
So there's options out there. The smaller crossover-ish vehicles, they're really slightly taller hatchbacks. They're certainly not SUVs, and they would definitely be worth a look. Alongside the likes of the Kia Rio, which is. That one definitely be easy to park in Ann Arbor.
Selling a Venza in Illinois with a $20,000 markup. I'm stuck on this markup site. Like this is like a rabbit hole for me. What have you done? $20,000? Okay, go ahead. Yeah. I am listening. No, I'm just looking at this.
Yeah, no.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Nicole falls down the markups.org rabbit hole.
Oh my gosh, this is bazonkers. How about a RAV4 Prime for $20,000 markup?
Yeah, no, it's
ridiculous.
Oh my god.
I'm
horrified. I'm back. I'm shutting this down.
On the plus side though, used car prices have been coming down in recent months.
That's true.
So you might also want to consider something, newish used.
Might be a better way to go than trying to do a few-year-old used car.
There might be. There's probably more options in something, that is a true hatchback.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find something, 3 or 4 years old, and it might be more affordable, might be less chance of a ridiculous markup on it.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom. All in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.